side of me. I never let you see. Welcome back to Overtime. Hour number two is underway. Jake Miller alongside Josh Tackhouse, Brett Hollander, and Davis Rangy. A Utah Highway. Oh, man, this one's bad. A Utah Highway gets swarmed when a truck hauling beehives overturns.
Oh, my gosh.
Beekeepers converged on a Utah highway to attempt to capture thousands of bees that swarmed in the roadway after a truck hauling more than 200 hives overturned. Authorities said the semi-trailer overturned Monday in the eastbound lanes of Interstate 80 near mile marker 149 in Summit County. Authorities said several people, including the driver, suffered minor injuries from bee stings. Two people were treated for stings at a local hospital. Beekeepers on the scene said the damage to the hives was severe. Unfortunately, more is damaged than not. Maybe 5% is salvageable. That's not good.
Dang, how big was the truck?
I had 200 hives.
Good God.
Yeah, not all those can fit in one hive.
That's crazy. Them poor guys that had to go in there. I couldn't do it. Bees, I'm telling you, it's not my thing. Bees are not my thing.
Meanwhile, former Barstool employee Brett Yormark might be replacing Bob Boulsby as the Big 12 commissioner. You want entertainment? That might be it.
When might this happen? Is this like in the works?
He's basically doing a victory tour.
Okay.
He's doing the Coach K victory tour. Like, I am the head of the Big 12. It's like, well, you basically destroy the Big 12. You let A&M and Missouri walk. You're letting Texas and Oklahoma, your backbone, walk. And now they basically got to build from the ground up because of what this guy has done. It's like, you don't need a victory lap. You need to go to the house now. Like, bring this guy in and try to salvage a deal to try to keep Texas and Oklahoma.
You really do. Because, I mean, really, without them, what is the Big 12?
You're basically like a hybrid of a Power 5 and a Group of 5. You're adding four teams in Cincinnati, UCF. Who else are they adding?
BYU
and Houston?
Yeah, those four.
Yeah, so you're pretty much a hybrid at that point. You're not – you really got an identity crisis.
I mean, really, if anybody can do it, Jay-Z can do it.
The only thing that makes sense about it is the fact that the Big 12 will finally have 12 teams again. That's what's so weird about, like, the Big 10. Because the Big 10 only had 10 teams at one point. Now they've got, what, 14?
Sounds right.
They have 14?
It's either 12 or 14, but they're called the Big 10.
Oh, no. I think the Big I think they're at 12.
At least the Pac-12, when they were the Pac-10, changed their name to the Pac-12 when they had 12 teams.
Let's see. Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, they got 14. Wow, they got 14? That's ignorant. That's so dumb.
What are we?
But they just called the Big Ten. It's just, you should have known that going in, that you could add and drop teams, that you shouldn't name your just conference after a number. The SEC was smart. Now they can do whatever they want. They can have a 400 team.
The SEC, the ACC.
Still be the SEC. Yeah, the ACC. What would the Big Ten change theirs to?
SEC has 14 teams also.
Yeah, but ours at least makes sense.
Big North. Northers. I don't know. That's four teams over the limit.
Above the Mason-Dixon.
That's a good name. There we go. Welcome to the...
the above the Mason-Dixon conference.
AMD, the AMD conference.
Presented by nobody.
Ew. Okay.
Meanwhile, we'd mentioned the new Cotton Bowl, Jerry World, AT&T Stadium, when we were talking about our college football playoff expansion. One thing that they have done since 2009 is they have hosted the Cowboys Kickoff Classic. That is coming to an end. It's been a part of the AT&T Stadium from the beginning. The first game of any kind featured BYU knocking Heisman Trophy winner Sam Bradford out of the game and upsetting Oklahoma 14-13 back in 2009. Alabama played in it three times. For a lot of programs, it was a pilgrimage of sorts. the trek to the state-of-the-art stadiums with the really big video boards. That was a big thing with them when that stadium first opened, was that giant video board that they've got just suspended.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And then you had the video of Sean Oatman, the one picture that somebody snapped where he just looks like a monster.
Has anybody ever kicked a football into that dangling thing?
Oh, yeah. I wanted them to do it at the battle at Bristol so bad.
Oh, yeah, that one was massive, too. Just hung right over. That was pretty cool, though. That was a spectacle.
National championship at Bristol?
156,000?
That would be super. You'd have to make sure it doesn't rain that day.
The thing is, you know the stadium could hold the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And you can hold the sounds, the rattles. I mean, it does it for NASCAR.
I just imagine Bristol trying to hold all the fans.
I just remember how bad it was to get in and out of the stadium, though.
The logistics that were terrible.
Yeah, they did not prepare for that at all.
That's the thing is, like, they had this big idea. It's like, we're going to create the biggest college football game ever. And then the TV and audio guys, they were lost. No. Like, they were not prepared for anything like that.
They weren't prepared for security either. I mean, at one point, they literally just let everyone go. Like,
they just couldn't, yeah.
Wait a minute, they weren't even checking tickets?
No, they just, at one point, they couldn't.
They just let everybody in. They're just flooding the gates.
There's so many people, and they were not prepared logistically whatsoever for this game. And they were just, like, overrun. Over, and they were just like, just who cares? Just go in.
So do they do it like the NASCAR races where you could take a cooler in?
They didn't, but eventually, yeah. You just walked in, basically.
If I didn't have obligations with Army Reserve that weekend, I would have been there. Yeah. And you best believe I would have had a 24-pack of beer in my cooler walking through
People said it was hell.
I think they ran out of water also, like midway through the game.
Oh, they did that against Florida as well that year.
Yeah.
That's when I about had a stroke.
Yeah, I heard it was a horrible, horrible time getting in and out of that stadium. The game itself was wonderful, but getting in, I'm pretty sure people were starting to, like, still trying to get in by the end of the first quarter.
Dude, like, at one point, I went to the All-Star race at Bristol during COVID.
Yeah.
And it got to the point, they ran out of beer and they ran out of water.
I mean, what else are you supposed to do there?
And, of course, it's dead of summer. It's like 100 degrees, basically. You're sitting there sweating. The only thing you've got is a beer that has been sitting there because they wouldn't let you take a cooler in at the time because of COVID. That was stupid, come to think of it. But, yeah, you're sitting there with a Heineken or Michelob Ultra, whatever you got, and you are just sitting there. That's the only source of hydration you've got is a 100-degree Heineken.
Sounds so delicious.
It was pretty terrible.
Yeah. A warm Heineken. Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, could you imagine, like, this is just kind of weird to me. Of course, in 2020, it was supposed to be Alabama and USC. Of course, the pandemic didn't allow that to happen because it's like you can only play in conference. That's something else that didn't make any sense about that. It's like Tennessee couldn't play like ETSU. They couldn't play Memphis. They couldn't play Clemson. But if they needed to make the trip to College Station or if they needed to make the trip to Gainesville, that was okay. That didn't make any sense.
Wait, why couldn't they play them?
Because this was COVID year and they were doing conference only.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Kentucky can make a trip to Gainesville or they can make a trip to College Station, but they couldn't play Louisville. South Carolina couldn't play a team that's literally 2 hours away.
But that whole year was just nonsense.
What was it also, the Big Ten didn't allow any fans that year, but the Big 12 did.
Yeah.
So you had Iowa State, who did have fans, and then you had Iowa, who wasn't allowed to have fans, and they're, what, a few hours apart?
Yeah.
Same state?
That's like, crazy. The same people. Just right.
The weirdest part about that was pumping in the crowd noise to Neyland. That was sad.
Dude.
Like, I went to the Missouri game that year, the first home game, and I was in social shock the entire time I was there. Were you there?
I was there.
Like, you walk into the stadium and you're used to it being, you know, 95 to 104,000 people. You're used to seeing that place just cram-packed and everybody's all spread out for an SEC game. They're pumping in crowd noise. You're just in social shock the entire time.
It literally didn't feel real. I was like, what is going on?
No, it felt worse. It felt like you were watching a scrimmage. All
right.
Man. You know, you're talking about, like, the regular season meaning things.
Yeah.
You know, and how excited are you, more excited for next season's Tennessee team or this season?
This season.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean by next season? You mean when Nico comes?
Yeah, like are you excited? Are you more excited to see like the team we're gonna be next year when we have like, it's like actually like all the recruits that we've been like just fiending over, all these 5-star, 4-star kids, and just seeing that recruiting class? Are you more excited for that than you are this season upcoming?
I think that's gonna be more of a down year.
I'd agree.
Okay.
Like we're gonna do really well this season. Next year we're gonna kind of take a step back. Just because you're losing so much. You're losing Cedric Tillman. You're losing Hendon Hooker. Jeremy Banks. Yeah. Trey Flowers. Like, all those guys.
But none of these other schools take a step back when they replace their quarterbacks. We're trying to be like them.
But now, here's the thing. If we can develop some depth, and these guys are every bit as good as advertised, might do about the same. Maybe only lose one more game than what we did. But I'll say this, and this is me just basing this off of superstitions. The last time that Tennessee played Syracuse in a dome, what happened that year?
It's just not the same.
Hear me out, man. What happened?
I know. We all know what happened.
We won a national title. What's happening in 2025? That would be Nico's junior year. We're playing Syracuse to start the season in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
It would be
in
serendipitous,
Atlanta.
If I'm using that word correctly.
Stackhouse, I'm from La Follette. Explain.
What the word means?
Yes.
Isn't it like just like pure, just like epiphany? Like, not epiphany, but like, you know, a beautiful story.
I believe in ghosts, Stackhouse.
Serendipitous. It's a good word. It's a big word. $4 word. Leave me alone. I can't define it word for word.
I've lost my full train of thought. Where were we at? Oh, yeah. Syracuse.
But I don't know, man. Dude, I'm telling you. If Heupel's offense is what it's supposed to be, I mean, how quick Hendon came in and took it over, I don't know. I don't expect Nico to be that bad, and even then, we have Taven Jackson, and he already knows the offense, so I don't even think we take a step back next year.
Can I go back to what Jake said? So, year 2016 with Dobbs last year, I kind of knew that was our shot, like our window.
God,
and
we knew it was it.
Yeah, and 2017, we were flipping between Dormady and JG, and I kind of knew we were going to be trash that year.
Oh, we barely beat Georgia State.
Right. Or Georgia Tech.
Or Georgia Tech,
we
yeah.
We did lose to Georgia State.
Yeah, we did lose Georgia State.
But, I feel like this year, honestly, with the way Heupel has a track record of with his quarterbacks, for some reason I feel like Hendon is going to have less pressure on him because now we know what's coming in after him, Nico. And if he's everything that he lives up to be, Hendon can just go out there and play. He doesn't have to worry about the pressure like Dobbs had in 2016 to go out and try to put this whole team on his back. Hendon can just go out and play loose, and we'll see what happens.
Well, and there was so much hype around JG as well. Granted, he wasn't a 5-star, but he was the number one dual-threat quarterback in the nation coming out of high school. So there was this sense of, oh, well, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the guy. And you knew from watching that Georgia Tech game.
First game, dog.
Of course, he didn't get to play that game. But you saw his body language on the sideline, basically with his arms crossed, not even looking at Quentin Dormady, like just being a bad teammate.
Pouting whole game.
Exactly. That was a telltale sign of how things were about to go. And then you could have beat Florida. That was ridiculous.
That was when it turned.
That was it. That was what broke us. Because you come out against Georgia and you don't do anything. You literally don't even show up. John Gruden is in the stands eating smoky dogs and using the troughs with the common man. And you lose 41-0.
With the common man.
With the common man. John Gruden was eating those nasty smoky dogs. That old hard bun by this point.
Gosh.
You couldn't get him nachos because the cheese was cold. The pretzels, hard as a rock. They could break your dentures. Soda's flat. The beer's flat. They didn't even have beer then, did they?
No.
He tried to sneak one in, and it went flat.
Going Charles Barkley on us.
Damn straight. But, I mean, think about that. That we thought that was rock bottom. And it was, in a sense, for the entire athletic department as a whole. And like I mentioned a few weeks ago, once you factor in where we were at November of 2017 and where we are now as an athletic program, with the basketball team being in the gutter, the baseball team being in the gutter, football team being in the gutter, things are a lot better now than what they were.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's not to say that we're going to win a national championship overnight in any of these sports.
That's what I'm saying, man. You just know you're not going to win a national championship. So now you just kind of hope you get a good record, and then you're like, I don't know, dude. When do you start thinking about a national championship? When do you see us seeing that again? Is that not
2025?
Really?
Give it 3 years. 2-3 years, maybe.
Yeah.
God. That's so poop.
That is if we keep the same trajectory we're on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is keeping that trajectory. But as long as we're in the current system that we are, with a 4-team college football playoff, yeah, it's going to take years. Now,
right?
If this were to happen next year, I mean, we would be in the conversation for the playoff.
I just think it would be so fun to do like a 12-16 team. Just
even if it were 12, I mean, you could argue we might be in contention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 12? I'd give us contention at least.
10-2 season we're in.
Yeah.
12 team.
Yeah.
Easily. Just being Tennessee and SEC. And our schedule alone is just always difficult. You have to play Alabama and Georgia every year. You automatically have one of the hardest schedules in the nation. So,
I want to bring something up when we come back. Be interesting. Get your thoughts as well. 865-546-8200, your number if you want to hop on with us. Overtime, back with more right after this. Welcome back. Overtime continues. We hear the term floated around quite a bit of museum programs in college football when you talk about your Nebraskas. Minnesota has championships. Does Tennessee strike you as a museum program? A team that used to be good that has no chance of being good again? Or has it felt that way?
Wait. I'm sorry. I'm reading this article. What?
So, do you know what a museum program is?
Yeah.
So, basically, a program that was once great.
But not just cannot get it together.
Cannot get it together now. Yeah. Does it feel like Tennessee has sort of climbed out of that phase? Or do you think we're a museum program that can't get it together?
Now, what would your standard be for getting it back together? Would it have to be like top four contention?
You got
to
have a 10-win season. We're the only school in the SEC that does not have a 10-win season in the past, 10 years?
I feel like we're hanging on to the edge with our leg over the side, about to pull up, you know, just kind of like, oh, I'm almost there, but you need like one extra. Because,
Because right now it feels like we're Ric Flair at WrestleMania about to get sweet chin music from Shawn Michaels. You're sitting there crying. Your fists are up. And then college football is going to look at you and say, I'm sorry, I love you, and just send you into retirement, into a museum program.
That 10-win season, if we need to get that. We need a 10-win season. And then I'd be like, yeah, we're back. Because, I mean, I feel like if this school hits a 10-win season, then – I mean, what slows it down again?
I feel like we're very close. Like, honestly, if you look some of the museum programs Jake mentioned, also Colorado, they won a national championship. But I don't feel like that's a school that's ever going to get back to
they
that
won't.
Level.
They left themselves behind when they left the Big 12.
Right. And like Tennessee, you look at the program, the history, the facilities, there's so much potential at Tennessee. We just have to get it. We just have to get the right guy. And maybe Heupel's that guy, maybe he's not, but I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Something that Russell said here a while back, he said, you don't always get what you want, but sometimes you might just get what you need, and it feels like Tennessee might have needed some Josh Heupel. I'm glad you mentioned Colorado because one of the things their athletic director said about a month ago in relation to the NIL thing that's going on, he said, well, what about schools like us that are getting left behind? And it's like, man, you all have not had a winning football coach since the 90s. You all left yourselves behind when you decided to join the Pac-12 instead of staying in the Big 12 when you had a chance. Right now, they have no shot, and they're not going to have a shot for a long time.
Yeah,
that's a museum program.
Our program's never going to stop fighting to be top 10, you know? Like, our fan base won't settle for it. I mean, we have been chomping at the bits as a fan base. I mean, we've gotten ADs fired. We have coaches fired. I mean, we're going to get what we want. So if we want to be back there, I mean, we're going to keep fighting. I don't think we're going to be anywhere like Colorado.
No. Like, they're in disrepair.
Yeah.
But Stackhouse, I just feel like at some point our administration, I feel like they had given up, especially in 2017. We're trying to sneak Schiano by us. Like, that wasn't going to slide. But I feel like in the past decade or so, the expectations between the fan base and the administration has just been so lopsided. The fans want it really bad, but I feel like at times the administration doesn't want it at all.
Right?
But
like,
do you feel a change with Danny White, though?
Absolutely. I do.
I mean, he's making things. He's pushing for change. He's pushing for a modernization. He seems to want to please the fans. And he seems to want, and he understands that winning brings in money, brings in opportunities to get more money.
Let me ask you this. Do you think John Curry puts up the VOLS on the south side of the stadium? Do you think he brings that back? Absolutely not.
No. Because I mean, he probably doesn't even think about it.
No. Danny White, he's obviously thinking about the common man.
Yeah.
Because that's where the money comes from. I mean, obviously, you're going to get donors that donate their share every year. And I've heard that a couple of people that are in that crowd are kind of mad because they're not getting their way. But it is what it is. That's fine.
I mean, really, and Danny might put those letters up, and like, he's not even under any pressure. It wasn't even like an appeasement thing. He just did it because he knew the fans would love to see him back.
Right.
And like, I feel like he would have done it for reasons just to kind of, you know, get out from under the fire or something.
And we've heard it from Russell before, but you hear like these big money donors, they'd rather be on the sidelines and more involved with a mediocre program than just have it running and flowing along in 10-win, 11-win seasons because they feel like they have more influence and power that way.
Yeah, and look at what happened when some of that influence and power got taken away. Things immediately get better.
Yeah.
Going up.
We just need to keep those people away. Keep them away. Forever, because I'd rather not have their money and go 11-1, 10-2, 12-0, than to have that money and have all these big conglomerate upgrades and everything that we're talking about, and go 5-7, 4-8, 3-9.
This group of people just seem to be putting money where the mouth is. You know, they're pushing for, they want the best hires you can get, and they're wanting the best, they're getting the best out of everything they've done. I mean, you can't tell me this is not more than, like I said yesterday, more than you expected from Heupel.
Yeah, I mean, luckily we don't have to pay Jeremy Pruitt anything or any of those guys that we fired. But at one point at Tennessee, there was so much dead money.
Yeah.
Between coaching buyouts, between having to pay Beverly Davenport, her buyout, John Curry's buyout. I mean, think about how much dead money we had at one point. Do we have any buyouts right now that we know of?
football wise, not that I'm aware of. It's not something I'm like even read up on.
We did pay Kevin Steele $900,000+.
Still paying Fulmer.
Recruiting has been has been good, and indeed it had not been good. No. Mediocre at best. I mean, that's another thing. It's like, oh, we had the number 18 recruiting class. We had the number 15 recruiting class. Like, okay, where were we in the conference? We're middle to the back half of the pack. It doesn't make a bit of difference.
I mean, let's see. Back in 2020, so 7 years prior to that, we had racked up $20 million in severance payments to football coaches.
That is awful.
I mean, that's insane. You're talking about dead money, boy. That's extinct money. That's crazy.
I mean, Derek Dooley's probably the reason you have all these big buyouts. He's the one that negotiated that deal with Mike Hamilton. The man's a lawyer.
Got played. He thought the orange pants would give him the upper hand.
Well, it didn't give him the upper hand, but he got $5 million on the way out the door. He's the first to get a huge buyout like that.
Whew, man.
And that's the thing. At the time, we thought that was huge.
I'm trying to contract a contract where I can just go in, suck, and get bought out, and just walk away with money. Like, that's such a W.
Well, how much is Auburn paying Gus Malzahn? It's like 22.
Such a W as a person.
It's around like 20 million.
God.
To not coach. And yeah. Plus, he's going to coach at UCF right now, so he's getting paid an Auburn salary.
Yeah.
And now he's in a place where there's no pressure.
My man doesn't care no more. His feet's up. It's toes in the water, buttocks in the sand.
And not a worry in the world.
Not a
cold
worry
beer
in
his hand.
Yes. And he's coaching a team that he doesn't really have to expect national championships from. He doesn't have to always beat Alabama. Good God, the weight off your shoulder, it's me. Gosh.
I feel like every time I hear that, somebody's beating down the door.
It's just what a win for him. To get out of Auburn, to get out from under Nick Saban's throat, to go down to UCF and get paid by Auburn and them just to be on vacation eating raw oysters.
I could eat raw oysters for days.
Dude.
I love raw oysters.
I went to like 3 dozen on the trip.
Brett, you a raw oysters guy?
Negative.
What?
Davis.
Never had them.
What do you put on yours, Jake? Do you put anything? You just go raw daddy.
I do like raw oysters.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, do you
put it on a crack-a-dude?
I put on a crack-a-dude.
A little dip.
I put horseradish and cocktail sauce on it.
That's money, dude.
That's money. That's money, dude.
No, I do like Oysters McClellan.
Ooh, yeah.
Oysters Rockefeller.
I get a – there's a place somewhere down there. I got Floribama's. Oysters Black and Blue. Ooh,
oh, those are good.
God, yeah, dude.
Floribama makes some good ones.
Yeah. I love a good raw oyster. Seafood in general.
What's your favorite seafood?
Me?
Yeah.
Crab legs, 100%.
Davis?
I hate seafood.
God, really? Shrimp. Like all seafood?
Yes. Big shrimp guy.
You're a big shrimp guy.
What's your favorite kind of shrimp? Like, what's your favorite preparations?
I mean, just fried shrimp.
That's your favorite way
shrimp.
To do it?
Yeah.
So would you rather have it, like, just beer battered, or do you like the coconut style?
Beer battered.
Cool, because I'm not a big coconut-styled shrimp guy. I'm not a coconut dude.
You can ruin a coconut that way.
You can just really just coconut.
I can't take my machete, open up a coconut that way, and just drink all the coconut water out of it.
I'm sorry. I don't know if I've even had coconut water before.
It's the most hydrating thing you can put in your body.
Really?
Yeah, it's got more electrolytes than anything.
That's sick. I might go home on the way. Just
I'm a
get
Royal
me a Coke.
Reds guy, though.
Royal Reds? Dude, almost... We, it's like, on vacation, we did a whole shrimp boil and stuff. We got, like, 9 pounds of crab legs, about 10 pounds of shrimp, you know, corn, all that such. So we were boiling out there, and I really wanted to get some Royal Reds, but we got a bunch of tiger shrimp instead, the big fat boys.
Big fat boys.
They were huge, man. It blew my mind. I forget how big shrimp can be.
I thought about going to the beach this year, and we just moved into the house.
Yeah.
You know, back in January. And I'm like, you know what? I just upgraded my house for a reason, for more space. I'm going to enjoy the summer in my house.
Oh, 100%.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to be taking a week off here this month. I mean, there's not a lot going on. You've already taken your vacation.
Yeah.
You need a vacation. You're going back home for a little bit. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to just
being Yeah.
Going to the house, if I want to crack a beer at noon, I'm going to crack a beer at noon.
That's such a good feeling. With nothing to do, it's like noon, just cracking a nice, super cold beer. Ugh.
Like, just go to the local shrimp or seafood place right down the road.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
Because they're the only ones that can get it in fresh.
Yeah.
What's the name of it?
No.
I'll tell you after the show.
Oh, okay.
No free bread.
Okay.
But, yeah, you can go there. I don't know if they got crawfish anymore or not. They might be out of season by now.
Dude, I cooked scallops for the first time when I was down there.
Nice.
Killed them, dude. Oh, best thing I've ever cooked in about 5 years, swear to God.
So, Davis, you don't even like shrimp?
Like, no shrimp at all? Like,
just not a seafood guy.
Fish, anything?
Uh-uh.
God. What do you eat?
Steak.
Okay.
I love steak.
So you're a red meat guy and chicken?
I guess, yeah. Chicken, pasta, steak. Cheeseburgers, pizza, basically anything.
Man of the land, you know?
Yeah. So if I smoke some chicken wings and bring them in, you're going to be munching down. You're not a smoked meat guy?
I'm more of a Chick-fil-A guy.
Oh, my.
Chick-fil-A, strictly.
What are you on the platinum status now?
Signature.
Is that really, like, you only eat Chick-fil-A chicken?
Pretty much. And Slim Chicken. I'm giving a lot of free sponsorships right now. A lot of promotions.
You know where I've never been I've always wanted to go?
Where?
I've never been to Raising Cane's.
Boy.
It's all right.
It's all right.
It's all
right. Haters hate. Love it. Love it. I love their sauce. That's really the only reason why I go.
I'm not kidding.
I smother it.
My favorite fried chicken that I used to get all the time, this place doesn't exist anymore. It came out of a gas station in La Follette.
Oh, gosh.
It was the best fried chicken you've ever had. You laugh. You laugh.
Until I try it, Jake, I'm just going to leave it up to you and your allergies. I was thinking about stuff I used to like. Miss Winners, dude. You know, I don't even.
Oh, dude, we used to have one. I loved Miss Winners.
Their breakfast was untouchable, dog. I loved Miss Winters growing up. I was thinking about that because I remember going to Dare Camp or whatever that was.
My mouth is watering thinking about those spicy chicken nuggets. Oh, man.
I think there's like one left in the entire country, and it's somewhere in the South.
It's in Cookeville.
Oh, is it?
I think it's in Cookeville.
Oh, that's crazy. No way.
Guys, you want to make a road trip? We'll hit up Bucky's on the way there, and then.
That one opened up the other day, too.
Yeah, so we could get.
Yesterday.
We can go get a brisket sandwich and some beaver nuggets, and then go to Cookeville, eat chicken, drive back. Get some more brisket, more beaver nuggets, maybe some beef jerky this time, and then we'll just come home.
There's a reason there's only one Miss Winters left in America, because it's trash.
Oh!
Whoa! We got a hater in our midst. What do you mean? Miss Winters is amazing.
At least I remember it being good, granted.
It got bought out by churches, though.
Oh, man. That
like a long time ago. I remember when it got bought out.
Maybe that's what turned it to trash.
Yeah, 100%.
I went to basic training with a guy. His mom owned 20 locations of Church's Chicken. I said, man, what are you doing in the Army?
Oh, my God. Is that not like a Texas brand? Is that not where it comes from?
I'm not sure. This one was tied in with a White Castle in Murfreesboro.
That's a boy.
I'm seeing Cleveland for Miss Winters.
Cleveland?
That's sick.
Unless there's one there, too.
I think there might be.
I just pulled up when I typed it in.
That used to be my spot, though, for, like, breakfast sammies.
Oh, never mind. It's Winners.
Yeah.
It's Winners Chicken?
Misery's Winners.
What'd you type?
I typed Miss Winters, and it popped up Miss Winters. Winners.
So, we had one in La Follette, actually, at one point. And I was sitting there. I never will forget this. I was, like, 4 years old. And we're walking in. Me and my uncle, we just got done, like, with a basketball camp or something. I was a little water boy. I got to run around all over the place.
Yeah.
So he's like, let's go try this out. And this woman sits down. My God, in time. It's the hottest chicken I've ever had in my life. I ain't never coming back to this place no damn more.
That's a great voice.
I mean, that's how it sounded. You know, like when you see some guys and you just can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
I had a very bad fencing insulation. I'll tell you about it here in a minute. But when the guy dropped it off, he was like, hey, buddy, you want me to stick this in your driveway? I said, what? And he's like, I'm here at your house with your fence. You want me to stick it in your driveway?
That's a great voice as well.
I was like, no, don't put it in my driveway. I parked my car there. I said, there's a place off to the side next driveway.
Which side? You want it on the right side or the left side?
The left? Little did I know that fence was going to sit there for 4 months while nobody installed it and it ruined my grass. Yeah, I was not happy.
That's pretty upsetting.
Stay with us. Final segment of Overtime coming up right here on Fan Run Radio.
Your pet is in a...
Final segment of Overtime. Former Tennessee Vol D. Beckwith has announced that he will be transferring to Kentucky.
Ew. Why?
I don't think he's eligible to play this year. That decision had to have been made already if you were going to transfer within conference.
Is that true?
Yeah. Like, you have a certain date in the SEC that you have to transfer by if you're doing a conference transfer. He's 6'5", 230. He only had 4 carries for 27 yards for us.
That's fine.
My biggest memory with him is how slow he was.
Yeah.
Compared to the other running backs we had. He was definitely a power back.
You can't. Yeah, you can't. In our offense, just being a scat back, like, man, if Alvin Kamara was still here, he would just obliterate people in this offense.
Imagine Josh Heupel coaching that 2016 or 2015 team.
Dude, we would not. I don't. If you implement that offense, oh my gosh.
11-1. 11-1 or undefeated.
They might have went 15-0.
Yeah, that team is just full of just such great talent, man.
The amount of NFL talent on those two rosters.
Yeah, dude. They just went to waste. God, dude. That team would have been so sick in this style offense.
Well, if Butch Jones didn't have Derek Barnett and Josh Dobbs carrying him up and down the field, he might have went 4-8.
I mean, just imagine if we didn't Hurd probably wouldn't have been so annoyed in this offense.
Yeah.
Dobbs gave him 2 more years at least.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
He at least gave him 2017. Bought him that.
God. Really, though, yeah. I mean.
He bought him 2016 against Georgia.
God, yeah.
That was a big thing about that year, 2015. The Georgia game is when something flipped. And then we lost one game the rest of the year.
I wish we would have just noticed that it was the kids carrying the coach so much sooner.
You look at the Georgia game in 2015. You compare Butch Jones to Derek Dooley side by side, numbers to numbers. They were very, very similar. Like, Butch Jones had one more win.
They're twins.
Yeah. I mean, really, dude, we just – every coach we've had have been mediocre, dude. We just have – people want to play for Tennessee, man. I'm telling you, if we keep this train running, kids in state want to play for the Vols. And if you can bring back winning so these younger kids can see what it's like to be a Tennessee Vol. I mean, dude, growing up now, it's just like almost, there was a moment where kids were like, look, in the James Franklin era. I mean, we were looking embarrassing there for a minute. When you grow up in Tennessee like that, it's sad.
Well, man, you know Terry Fair. Former defensive back and, I guess, sort of current member of the Drive.
Yeah.
You know, when he was recruited here in 1994, you know, they didn't have the star system. They just had the blue chips. I mean, he came out here from Phoenix, Arizona. He still lives here.
Yeah.
Like, even after his time in the NFL was done, he moved back here. He didn't go back to Phoenix. He moved here.
Knoxville's a great place. Tennessee is a great state to live. And then, in general, Knoxville's a beautiful city. It's got its own charm. Yeah. It's not overpowering.
Our stadium's literally on the lake.
Yeah. I mean, there's so there's places you can get to and go. You can take kids anywhere, really.
It's a great college city because it's not too big and overwhelming, but it's also big enough to where you feel like you're kind of on your own once you're away from home and up here at college. So.
Well, no, and you moved here for school from Memphis.
Yeah.
Biggest city in the state.
Nashville now, probably.
Nashville, now that it's grown. And, of course, me moving here from La Follette. It's like, okay, I've still got a McDonald's. I've got a Burger King. I've got every fast food restaurant option that I had in La Follette, minus a Buddy's and a Chick-fil-A. But, I mean, it's such an easy adjustment here in Knoxville compared to some other place. I mean, you go out to USC. I mean, some of these guys that come, if you take me out of La Follette, you send me out to L.A., I'm not surviving.
God, no. No, you're not.
I hated the 30 days that I was there. I only spent two around civilians.
West Coast life is so different. Society just everything moves differently. They all think differently from over here.
The Washington, D.C. was, I mean, just really fast-paced. I didn't fit in there. The only place that I went outside of East Tennessee that I really fit in was probably Killarney, Ireland. That is the only place that I felt like, okay, I can vibe with these people.
You say Ireland?
Yes. It's like Campbell County. They just don't have trees on the mountains. I'm serious.
I felt right at home in old Ireland.
Well, it made sense because a lot of our ancestors immigrated from there here, and you can see why.
My blood was boiling. I could feel my ancestors talking to me.
They were so nice. The Southern hospitality, that's a thing. Like, dude, Irish hospitality was awesome.
That's the funniest thing when I talk to, like, doing weddings and stuff from people that come down from, like, Chicago or Boston and stuff. Yeah. And the people that have moved here and settled in Tennessee recently in the past 10 years is they stay because of the pace of life. I mean, dude.
It's laid back.
It is so drastic of a change that it takes them, like, a year to get used to moving at that speed. I mean, it is. It's such a nice speed. No one's just always up in your face like a big city. And if you want to be a star, I mean, God, dude, I mean, you have such a fan base that stretches across Tennessee here that, I mean, you're a star across the state.
That's a big thing. We're getting, you know, recruits to come here. Davis, you mentioned something during the break, you know, in regards to the guys we're bringing in. And, you know, we're sitting here talking about, you know, how things are going to go right, how things are going to go right. And what the reaction is going to be if they do go right. But you mentioned, what's it going to be like if Heupel does take a step back? Like a 5-7 year?
It happened at UCF. Every year the record got worse. I mean, I hate to be that guy, but.
Do you count the COVID year? That's such a weird outlier on that.
I don't, but even if you take the COVID year out, he still was losing more and more each year.
12-1, and then he went what? 10-3.
Yeah. I've always given them this benefit of the doubt down there is because right after that was right after they had gone undefeated and still been snubbed a spot.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that not affect your recruiting? You know, if you sign there as a top recruit, you're not going to get the same level of recruits as you were getting because under it was Frost, right? That's Scott Frost.
Yeah, Scott Frost. They went 0-12 and then 12-0.
Yeah, right. And you get that, right? You have a recruitment of he's like, we can go 12-0 and we're going to put our name in this bid.
Mm-hmm.
Build this. You immediately get told no by the NCAA. You're not getting the same recruits. No. You're probably going to see a decrease in these kids going elsewhere that have a chance to even, you know, go into Cincinnati and at least get a breathing chance.
Which they're going to be in the Big 12, so they're going to have a legitimate shot every
year. And so,
whereas UCF.
Now at Tennessee, he can build that same thing and go off that same. I mean, you're telling me he didn't learn anything from Frost at all, or even in that system of building something that you can make, you can put your foot in that door and say, "Hey, we're here."
Right.
I don't know if he takes a step off ever. But if he does, how quickly do you react?
You got to think about the dumpster fire he inherited, man.
I know. Like, how much leeway do you give him if he does take a step back like he was saying?
Realistically, I thought we were going to go 5-7 last year.
That's what I said yesterday. He did so much better than we expected last year.
Like, I went with what my heart was telling me, not what my brain was telling me a lot of the times last year. But if we would have went 5-7, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Dude, it was so much fun watching the offense again. Seeing us score, seeing us move the ball. He brought so much excitement everywhere. I felt there's just – he has everybody behind him now. I think it's just the only way is getting us that 10th win. If he does that, then, geez, good.
Well, I thought we were going to go 4-8 last year before the season started. But you have to give him credit. I mean, out of the past three, after inheriting the mess-wise, he had by far the worst out of any of the three, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you hear the saying all the time, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken bleep. Well, he did.
He did.
He did.
he got the kids behind him, and the kids want to play for him. You can see that. And like you said yesterday, I mean, they don't give up. They didn't give up in a single game. Even the losses we had, I don't care about the bowl game loss. I was already annoyed.
And it's about the players. It's not all about him.
Yeah, man. I just – if he takes a step back, it'd have to be this year. His recruiting classes can't fail. I think that's the only thing, because that was his biggest hindrance, is that UCF, yeah. You know, that – he got worse and worse every year after Frost left, right? But, I mean, if as long as that's not happening here.
Which, and that's when the transfer portal. I mean, there's so many factors.
Tennessee's
that,
different
man.
Than UCF, man.
That's the thing. We don't have people that are good transferring out of here.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah. Tennessee's not
people
UCF.
Are transferring here now.
Yeah.
Buckles backpack.
It is what it is. Oh, man. You guys hungry?
I'm starving.
Yes, sir.
Let's get out of here. That's going to do it for us here on Overtime. For Stack, for Brett, for Davis, I'm Jake Miller. We will see you tomorrow right here on Fan Run Radio.